Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Misfits. I'm Christian, and I'll narrate tonight's show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
As a long fan of Horror Den of Misfits podcast, I really wanted to try to narrate one of their scary episodes. Thank you for being here.
Story time.
I'm sending you a Navy SEAL story as told by my late grandfather. So his Navy SEAL team was led by Felix Giant, and had been tasked with investigating the strange occurrences that had arisen in the wake of the disaster in a small town near Hiroshima, Japan. As they navigated through the rubble-strewn streets, they encountered survivors, their faces etched with fear and disbelief as they recounted stories of creatures from Japanese folklore roaming the streets. They pressed on, determined to uncover the truth behind these unsettling reports. It was during that search that they stumbled upon a dilapidated laboratory hidden amidst the ruins. Inside, the air was thick with the scent of decay and something far more sinister. As they cautiously made their way through the dimly lit corridors, their senses heightened to the eerie silence that enveloped them, a sudden movement caught their attention. There, standing before them, was a yokai unlike any they had ever seen. Its form was a twisted amalgamation of human and beast, its skin as pale as death itself and eyes that glowed with a ghostly light. Its presence seemed to defy the laws of nature, sending shivers down their spine as they struggled to comprehend its existence. Without hesitation, they opened fire, the sound of gunfire echoing through the desolate halls. But to their astonishment, the yokai simply vanished into thin air, leaving behind only a lingering sense of dread. They scoured the laboratory, searching for any trace of the creature, but found nothing. It was as if it had never been there at all. Exhausted and bewildered, they made their way back to the surface, their minds reeling with the horrors they had witnessed. Upon their return, they relayed their encounter to the Japanese forces, hoping for answers or guidance. But to their dismay, they simply nodded in understanding, their expressions grim. "No one will ever believe what you have seen," they said solemnly. And as my grandfather looked into their eyes, he knew that they were right. The truth of that fateful day would remain buried beneath the rubble, known only to those who had experienced it firsthand. So, I know in the past I mentioned an encounter with what I think may have been a dogman, yet I haven't posted the full story. It's taken me a while to find the time, and it's taken a long time for the trauma to settle so that this period in my life could be looked at from a more objective viewpoint. I've never really revealed anything this personal to the general public before, and I anticipate this post may get a bit more attention as well, so it's a bit nerve-wracking for me. But after keeping it secret for years, I think it's about time this becomes known. Before anyone gets too invested in this post, I should note that I did not actually see that much of the dogman. I put that in quotes because I am still not 100% sure if that is what it was, but I still find it the most plausible. This is more about the experience and how it and the creature have affected my life. So, here it is. This experience took place when I was 10 years old. At the time, I only had my mother taking care of me, no father around. We lived with my great-grandmother in Paw for the majority of my childhood. My mom had made friends with a woman who owned a large lakefront property near Lake Michigan in Wisconsin. She made an offer to let us live in a small cabin on the property she owned in exchange for work at her art shop. So we ended up flying up in approximately 2007. One thing that helps me remember the year is that the next year after we came back, Obama was elected president. Now, this property was located in a relatively isolated area. There were other inhabitants in the general area, but from the main road, you would have to turn onto this gravel road that led into this heavily wooded area, drive for a minute or two, and then you would be on the property. On this property was a small, deep pond, a shed, the woman's house, which was decent, not too upscale, but better than our cabin, and behind the house was a cliff that overlooked a shoreline of Lake Michigan. Once you get onto the property, you are surrounded by woods. In hindsight, it sounds like I'm describing a horror movie setting. So when we first arrived there, I believe it was mid or late summer, possibly early fall. One weird detail was the presence of this large, red, dead fish that was just laying on the ground. I found it in between the small, deep pond and the shed. It was so out of place. It was a big fish and couldn't have come from that little pond. I have tried to Google what types of large, red fish live in Lake Michigan, but nothing I found looks like the fish I saw. The closest thing I could compare it to was a red snapper. Now that I look it up, it looks a lot like it. Part of my mind is trying to rationalize this as maybe someone from the woman's household bought it, didn't like it, and threw it out. But why anyway? That was just the first of many odd things that occurred. I honestly can't remember too many other normal life details of my time spent in Wisconsin since we were barely there a year. But when winter came, that's when I remember things started to get a little strange. In the snow around the shed, there were these odd, huge footprints. The thing is, I remember them being round and sort of compared their roundness to an elephant's foot, but I don't think they were that round. Just rounder than any normal snow footprint I've seen. My mother chalked them up to bare footprints since that was the only rational explanation we could come up with. But I don't remember them being shaped like a bear's. There were also some other strange snow prints. One of them looked like someone put on a pair of snow skis and walked through the snow a little. The strange thing about them is, after a while, they just stopped. My mother was weirded out about these ones. It was like whatever was walking there flew away or disappeared or something. I've considered that someone around there may have been walking in snow skis, but this was a fairly leveled, dense forest. My mom said she heard something on the radio about a wallaby escaping from captivity or something, so we just kind of sort of assumed it may have been that. We made a cute little song about bears and wallabies playing on the range or something. Now for the shitty part. Fast forward a couple of months. It was in the middle of winter, and it was absolutely freezing cold outside. We're talking sub-zero temperatures. I think because we were so close to the lake, it was worse. This encounter happened late at night. Our cottage had one floor and a loft where I slept. I can't remember every detail of what exactly happened, but everything seemed normal until I was woken up by my mother panicking in the middle of the night. She ordered me to stay up in the loft and not come down. I was so confused and scared because I had never seen her act like this, and she wouldn't tell me what was going on. She had me bring up the ladder so in case something got in it, would have a harder time reaching me. So for about what felt like an hour I stayed in the loft, watching my mom as she was looking at the window with a knife in one hand and a phone on the other, scared shitless until the police arrived. When they got there, she told them she heard banging on the side of our cottage, which didn't make sense to me at the time because I didn't hear anything like that. We left the place that night and found a motel which was just about to close until we came. I remember what that room looked like. That was without a doubt the most traumatic night of my life. I thought we were going to die because something was after us, and I'm pretty sure my mom did too. We had just moved to this cottage in Wisconsin, and we weren't even there for a full year. The incident was so terrifying that my mom immediately booked a flight back to Pia where we originally lived, but our flight was delayed. I remember doing what kids do, be impatient and move around a lot in the airport. I had stepped on a metal part of this flat escalator, which left dirt marks. This janitor guy got mad at me, and so did my mother, and I went back to feeling like shit. While we were sitting in the waiting area, there was this rude family with a girl who was making fun of me for some reason, pointing and laughing at me a little bit. We were unfortunately seated next to each other on the flight, and for some reason, she started picking off her hair and placing them on my mom. It was an awkward flight with a lot of tension, which made it even worse. I also remember cussing at them on the way out of the airport. It was out of character for me to do, but goddamn was I out of it. Since we were and still are very poor, we have lived with my great-grandmother for most of my childhood, never truly owning a home or property. So when we left Wisconsin, we had to come back. Things seemed to be normal for a while, and it had been a couple of months after this incident. Then, for some unknown reason, my mother began behaving extremely neurotic, which I had no clue why. It really stressed me out when she would do this. I can't exactly remember what she was doing, but it was enough to stress a young child out. One day she slept for longer than usual, and when she woke up she thought she had urinated blood as her urine was a darkish color. She kept saying that she had missing time, like she had experienced an unusual amount of missing time or something. This insanity went on for about a week or so. Now, for my encounter. So on one of those nights, we were in the kitchen. My mom was making something to eat, and I was sitting at the dinner table staring outside the kitchen window. The house we lived in sat on a large incline that overlooked the town area, and I was looking at the lights from the city. Right outside of the house near this window was a large oak tree that was close to our house, with its branches being above the window about 10-30 feet away. It was dark, so you couldn't see anything else but the distant lights. So as I was sitting there, staring at the town lights, something red appeared in the peripheral corner of my eye. I had thought it was another city light, so my vision slowly wandered over until I was looking directly at it. One singular, glowing eye. Sort of reptilian in shape. From my memory, it's not exactly like how Mothman is usually described. I sort of remember a slit pupil like a lizard, but more luminous. I don't remember seeing another red eye, but it may have been obstructed by leaves or branches. I sat there kind of daydreaming a bit, not totally comprehending what I was seeing. Then it blinked, it blinked. I remember backing away from the table saying, "Oh no, please no," and telling my mom there was something outside of the window. She looked and saw it, but didn't immediately panic like I did. Honestly, this night might have been worse than the first. No, actually, I think it was because I saw it. We went up into the bedroom and were just kind of sitting there, clueless on what to do. My mom resorted back to her manic behavior and basically stayed praying over me until I fell asleep. She was still doing it when I woke up. Then we got into my mom's van and left. What happened next was super stressful, to the point where I just wanted to die. For the next day or two, my mother would drive us around aimlessly in her van. She didn't have any direction or destination. She just drove crazed out of her mind. We would occasionally stop back at our grandmother's house in the daytime, but we wouldn't stay there at night. At some point, a mattress was brought into the back of her van for me to sleep on. I think we stayed in a lighted parking lot the night when I fell asleep. When I woke up, she was still driving around. I hated and pleaded and begged for her to let us just go back home, even though I was also scared about returning. After much coercion and persuasion, I eventually talked her into going back to our grandmother's house so I could sleep in a comfortable bed. I was still just a kid and was really tired of this bullshit. She was so paranoid and panicked that when we came back, she didn't let me eat the food she had previously made, even though it was perfectly fine. I was hungry, and to this day I hate letting any food go to waste. I had a collection of stuffed animals that meant a lot to me. As memorabilia, she put them all in a black trash bag. I found them, but she still wouldn't let me have them. I think she burned them because she was burning a bunch of other stuff because of her out-of-control manic mental state. God, I hated that she did that. This hurt me a lot. I loved those things. She ended up putting multiple cross statues and Jesus pictures across the house, as well as outside on the porch on the oak tree. Even put some cross symbols on doors around the house. You know, this is actually kind of painful to remember now, even though it's so far back and removed, like mentally painful. One other odd thing that happened, though, while she was burning things, my grandmother gave my mom this old Bible-looking book for some reason. This just wasn't any old Bible either. It had a hard leather covering with some sort of carving on the cover. This Bible was in a language I did not know, but used the English alphabet characters. It had old-looking black and white images that looked medieval in style, though I can't remember what they depicted. Probably some disturbing medieval art. My mom burned it. For the longest time, I was perplexed about what this book was, what it meant to my grandma. Was it truly a cursed and evil item that needed to be destroyed? I spent some time searching for clues and found what looks almost exactly like the Bible my mom burned. I can't remember if this was exactly what this Bible looked like, but it's pretty damn close. Does anyone here know anything about this Bible? I also read that it might be Lutheran. Eventually, we found a place to stay with one of my mom's friends in her basement, stayed there for a week or two, and then eventually a shelter for abused women. It did work out, though, since we received some help after that and found a place in Ohio where we could live. This incident became a thing we were able to eventually leave in the past and get over, but occasionally we do bring it up and talk about it since. At first, it was hard because she would not talk about it at all, but later on, we were able to discuss it, and I got her to tell me what she saw outside our cabin in Wisconsin. What she said she saw were two red lights about 5,100 feet away from our cottage. She showed me how it was moving, whatever it was, not erratically, but keeping its distance. Behind our cottage was this heavily forested area. This thing was about 5,100 feet away from our cottage in this forested area. Mom physically showed how it is sort of getting closer to the cottage, though it was still a considerable distance away. The two red lights never got close, or at least close enough for her to describe any features other than those two red lights. She would not let me come down from the loft to check out why she was panicking and what was happening. She had called the police and said that she had heard banging on the side of our cottage, because she knew that was more believable than if she were to describe what she was seeing. She had a knife the whole time before the cops came. As soon as the cop car arrived, she said whatever this thing was looked over at the police lights coming through, turned around and took off running near a dilapidated barn that was located near where this thing was, further back into the forest. I never had a glimpse of this thing in Wisconsin. At first, she chalked it up to somebody with red goggles stalking us, or maybe playing a prank. She was surprisingly skeptical about it being something like a cryptid. However, this argument doesn't really hold up, because during our first encounter in Wisconsin, it was late at night during winter. It was extremely cold up where we lived, and especially since we lived right next to a great lake. I don't think anybody would have been out there to play a prank like that, or try and spy on us through a small window in our cottage. Now, this is where a strange little discrepancy pops up. Sometime after the first encounter of this thing in Wisconsin, we again had an encounter with a red glowing-eyed being right outside of our grandmother's house, which we had lived for many years secure and without paranormal incident. This to me suggests that this may have been the same entity in both encounters. So how did it travel such a distance? Why did it travel across many hundreds of miles just to harass us? It has no logic. Such a feat makes me believe that whatever we encountered was not a normal physical being, bound by laws of physicality, and traversing such distances really would not be a problem for it. There's also the subject of what this really was. For many years, the only explanation that I could come up with is that it was an actual, real demon. Since this incident, it has popped up into my mind occasionally. Sometimes I would just happen to click myself into the paranormal side of YouTube where they talk about cryptids and supernatural happenings and phenomena. This piqued my curiosity, and I began doing some online research, comparing other people's encounters and descriptions of various kinds to my own. I have since read, heard, and listened to other people's encounters with beings that also have glowing red eyes. This actually appears to be a common phenomena that comes up in such encounters. There are a few Bigfoot sightings which some are reported to have red eyes. Both the Mothman and the Flatwoods Monster were described with red glowing eyes. I have read of one or two alien encounters where they had red eyes. And apparently, dogmen are often reported as having glowing red eyes as well, though not all. This is definitely a supernatural phenomenon, and one that inspires fear. I would go back and forth in my mind trying to figure out which cryptid this could have been. I did not see the whole body, thank God. If I saw a giant werewolf-looking thing with murder eyes and a tree outside, my soul would have jumped out of my body. I have heard many other people on the DME podcast describe them with red eyes, and there was one episode in particular that reminded me of my own encounter. Only the guy could see the full body. He said it was also in a tree. Then there was the location. I think where I lived was not too far off from Bray Road, where the infamous Beast of Bray Road was reported. That one had red eyes. I honestly don't have too much else to compare, but if anything would be living out in that forest, walking around in Antarctic winds and deep snow without a problem, it would probably be one of these beasts. I apologize that this post was so long and probably includes some unnecessary details. I originally just wanted to post my encounters with this thing that harassed us. It's just that I have never told anybody about this entire ordeal, this chapter of my life, mostly bound by paranoia coming from my mom. It almost feels kind of good to get off my chest, cathartic, to type this out. To this day, that shit still sticks with me. Also, sorry if this post seems a bit unorganized and chaotic. I stayed up over an hour typing this out and haven't proofread it because I got tired and wanted to get it out before I fell asleep. If anybody is interested in hearing more about this or wants to offer any advice or explanations or anything, please feel free to comment. I hope somebody finds this interesting, and I am hoping for the best feedback. Thank you for reading. Hello everyone. I live in rural Southwest Virginia, in Appalachia, and heard odd whistling in the woods a few days ago at night. It started when I was playing airsoft alone in the woods at about 7 p.m., in almost pitch black, I live a lonely existence and was walking around the woods behind my house. I got to a clearing just on top of a hill and sat down to take a rest. Just when I sat down, I heard odd whistling. It was perfect whistling, and it whistled a tune I had never heard before. It was clear, and it sounded close, within 150 feet or less, and came directly from behind me. It would have had to be in the woods, near the property line with one of our neighbors. It instantly gave me chills down my back, and I got the feeling of being watched. I, not being an idiot and having a brain, wasted no time in sprinting full speed down towards my house, hopping over rocks and limbs. The whistling stopped shortly after I got moving, but I still felt like I was being watched and like something was off. I didn't see anything when I did turn back to look while opening a gate, but that may be because of the darkness and the distance I had moved. I don't think it was a bird, as the leaves on the trees haven't regrown yet, and it still stays cold at night and sometimes during the day, but I don't know much about birds. There were also no birds to be seen, and everything else was quiet. I also doubt it was a person, as I heard no talking, no leaves crunching, and no other noises. I should also mention the whistling started out of nowhere and did not gradually get louder, as if someone or something was moving closer while whistling. I should also mention that I've been in those woods a decent amount of my life, and I've never heard anything like it before, not even once. I was a bit tired, but I've been more tired before while being up in those woods at similar times before, and I'm not one to hallucinate. The situation still gives me chills when I think about it. I've had the feeling of being watched before in those woods, but those feelings have never been so intense and extreme as that one night. I was hoping if anyone could know what it was. Was it an animal? Maybe, but me and my family have dogs around the house, and most wild animals stay away, and I haven't really seen anything outside of a bear or two and deer in those woods. I should also mention the dogs occasionally bark randomly into the woods, but they weren't really barking at the moment when the whistling happened. I was hoping anyone could identify what it was, maybe, if there is even enough information, and I'm not saying it was paranormal, but I'm not saying it was just a wild animal. Also, apologies for typing so much. I just want to make sure all the details are included. My father's sighting. We were living in northern part of the Mitten, the main part of Michigan back in the 80s. One evening, I saw a herd of deer running across the field and into the woods. I had also heard a howl of a wolf. I wasn't too interested, but I knew Dad liked being a wildlife spotter, so I went in and told him that I think the deer were spooked by a wolf pack. Dad got up, grabbed the binoculars off the table by the door, and went out. I sat down and started watching my Friday night shows, thinking nothing of it. Then the door slammed and I heard Day holler at Mom. It stood up, ran to their bedroom and came out loading the shotgun and stood by the door. Mom told me to go downstairs to the finished basement and watch my TV down there. Dad spent the night in a chair in the living room. The gun was never put back in his gun cabinet. The next day I asked what was wrong since he was still looking out the front window. He didn't say. Said he didn't want to scare me. Not that it helped, because at the age of 9, I was imagining all sorts of horrors. He passed last year, and I was going through his things with Mom, and I saw this folder with werewolf on it. Inside he had handwritten notes and a few pictures he took. The pictures didn't show anything interesting, but one showed a 6-foot hay roll, and his notes said that it stood taller than the roll. Other pictures showed the churned dirt from a herd of deer running flat out. I'm not totally convinced that he saw something like the dogman, but something scared him. He never used to hunt with friends during deer season, but after that it was always him and his buddies. Sorry if this isn't too exciting, and for the fact that it's secondhand, I was too into the Dukes of Hazzard when it happened to give a care. I was walking from my boyfriend's house last night a bit after midnight. I've known him for 6 years, so I go there all the time and never felt anything like this. His estate is surrounded by woods on one side and few houses are sprinkled here and there. The path I take to my house is overlooking a hill and the woods are to my back. The entire walk takes maybe 5 minutes. As I was walking, I was fumbling through my pockets to find my AirPods when a sudden feeling of dread overwhelmed me. This came out of nowhere and caught me by surprise, but I was suddenly paralyzed with fear that I contemplated calling him to come and get me, but I couldn't force myself to wait or make any noise. I don't know what I thought was going to happen, but I could feel tears come and I started running. As I was approaching a clearance, I felt that the air is so thick and quiet and everything just felt off. I've been walking this same path for the past 6 years and never felt anything like this. To clarify, we're in Ireland, relatively safe city, and there are no large animals or predators in the area. Not sure if this even belongs here, but I would like to hear your thoughts. I still feel super uneasy and uncomfortable about this. Thanks, Edit. Thanks for everyone chiming in. In hindsight, walking at night with AirPods was very stupid, and I was definitely lulled into a false sense of security, living in a relatively safe city and a neighborhood where rarely anything happens. I should also probably add that I'm an immigrant, and despite living in Ireland for almost a decade, I don't know much about fairies. In any case, I'm glad nothing bad happened, but this definitely shook me enough that I will start being more careful when walking alone. I saw someone mentioned the gift of fear, which I added to my Kindle. Think my childhood friends saw a dogman. When I was a kid, my two closest friends just happened to live right next to each other in the eastern countryside of my town. One of them told me he woke up to go to the bathroom or something and said he saw a pair of yellow glowing eyes staring in at him. When I stayed the night with him one night, I questioned him about it, and he was so terrified that I brought it up that he tried to go sleep with his mom. I eavesdropped, and he told her he was scared that the yellow eyes were going to come back. His neighbor, my other friend, was staying the night with me at one night. He told me about this huge black dog that he saw in the back of his pasture where their horses were during the day. He said it was about the size of a horse and on all fours. He really emphasized how large it was, which is the main thing upset him. Not far from this road, there is a very old graveyard that locals claim is an old Indian graveyard. It has gravestones dating back to the 1800s. I've had three very unusual experiences there that tie into some of the dogman folklore I've learned about, like hearing a howl so loud and deep that it reverberated through my friend and I, and both of us took of running towards the car in a fight or flight response. I had a fourth paranormal experience there, but it wasn't dogman related. The town east of Claremore, called Prior Creek, also has a dogman encounter on YouTube. Large predators have very large territories, so I wonder if we have a dogman prowling the area, living here. It would not be impossible given the amount of farmland, woods, and rural expansions of land here. Our nearby city, Tulsa, also has a few published sightings. Just been connecting the dots. I have a question. So, this happens every year at the same time of year. I live in Kentucky, and where I live is a subdivision, but we live towards the back next to miles of woods. Every fall, it's the same thing. Anytime you get home after dark, you feel like you're being watched, and not like a normal being watched. It's the most ominous feeling. Everyone in my household has experienced the same thing. You can feel where it's coming from, and it's always from the woodline. Also, we have heard a lot of noises, and I have been a Kentucky native my whole life. I know what the normal animals around sound like, and it's not that. My fiancé and I have even seen figures of different sizes, never close enough to make out a lot of details either. As well as, and these are her words, it sounded like something trying to sound like a dog, but it was diluted or even almost robotic. What are we dealing with here? So I'm 40 now, but this happened almost 20 years ago. I was born and raised in the Florida Panhandle, and that's where this happened. It occurred on Quintet Road, right at the bridge, crossing the Escambia River on the west side of the bridge. It was around 2:30 a.m. The area is more built up now, but back then it was just a long road with no street lights. If you look it up on Google Earth, there is a wildlife management area, and the river runs all the way to Pensacola Bay going south. Additionally, if you look on the map, the heavily wooded area around the river runs all the way north to Georgia and Florida National Forest. As I was coming down the road heading west, I saw something on the driver's side of the road in the distance. I had no idea what it was. It looked like an animal of some sort. As I got closer, I didn't want to hit it if it tried to cross, so I stopped about 100 feet away from it. When I stopped, it started to move on all fours diagonally across. But as I was looking at this thing, I was in shock at how large it was, and it was oddly colored for any animal in the area. There are black bears in the area, but this was much larger, and its fur was a dark, dingy gray color. As it crossed the road to my passenger side, it stood up, and I have never experienced this level of emotion ever. It was like a primal type of fear or shock. I couldn't believe what I was seeing, but I knew I stood no chance against this thing if it decided to attack, and it was just standing there looking at me. I was frozen because I was looking at a werewolf. It had to be at least 7 feet tall, 600-pound plus, with glowing orange-slash-yellow eyes. When it disappeared into the tree line, I stomped and got away from where it was as fast as I could. I didn't talk about my encounter for several years and finally started talking about it. I looked and looked, and the dogman is the only thing it could possibly be that I could find. Was it a dogman? I've been posting here about an ongoing situation about some property my family owned. Basically, Moo grandparents' old house is 20 acres in a large suburban neighborhood, more than half of it forested. A few months ago, I noticed all the deer had fled, not one to be seen. The animals were much quieter than usual, and I barely saw any apart from turkeys, reduced in population and creeping quietly under the hedge geoes, and who dashed away as soon as they saw me unusual. I knew something strange was going on at the property. But the thing that convinced me it was otherworldly was a deer pelt lying in the front lawn. It looked freshly skinned with the meat still on it. Around it, for nearly 10 feet, were scatterings of white and black deer under fur in large circular motions, almost like someone forming an S.O. symbol. I thought the chances were slim that it just was some flap of skin that fluttered away from a coyote kill. It seemed like a message. I'm here, stay out if you know what's good for you. I felt scared at first, but then just felt sort of meh about it. Maybe there was a mysterious monster, but if I kept away from that property religiously, I probably would be okay. Besides, I had bigger things to think about. So I stayed away from it for more than a month and didn't have too much happen. Sometimes weird things would, like a dead squirrel or the cleanly cut antler of a stag appearing on my running route. Finally, I noticed a few dried sage leaves randomly outside my backyard shed. I don't grow sage, and I'm not sure where it came from. It smelled awfully good. Lately, I've been over to the property, and it seems much less intense. Turkeys and squirrels are much more visible. Do you think anything weird happened? A Bigfoot? A dogman? I'm in a suburb of Minneapolis, Minnesota, by the way. Thoughts? I was talking to a girl I met last night super late on the phone, and we started talking about the outdoors. She asked me what I feared, and I told her I don't fear many animals, but there are crazy things out there. I explained to her Sasquatch and dogman. She then proceeded to tell me about an experience she had 2 months ago. She was out in her backyard at about 1 a.m. letting her dog out when something screamed at her three intense og, og, og. She froze, and after a second, she was able to regain control and ran to her house. As she was getting close to her door, the side motion sensor light turned on, right from the direction of the creature screaming. It then proceeded to do a big huff and then screamed again. She said it was the most intense fear she's ever experienced. Then I started trying to find audio of Dogman screams. She said it was more of a scream and not a howl. She's an outdoors woman, and she knows cougar screams, and this was much more intense and fear-inspiring. She chalked it up to being a skinwalker. I used to be able to find a couple of decent Dogman screams on YouTube, and now I can't find many. Does anyone have a good site or place for audio recordings? A few years ago, I wanted to sell one of my Kawasaki motorbikes because I needed some extra money. The bike was still worth around $3,000 to $4,000 at that time, even though it had been used for a few years and had many miles on it. Luckily, there were lots of bike enthusiasts all over the state where I lived. First, I tried posting about the bike in some groups, but the offers I received were very low, and I didn't want to accept them. Then I had an idea to put an ad on Craigslist. Surprisingly, it turned out to be a success, and within just 10 minutes of posting the ad, multiple people replied, showing interest in buying the bike. Sadly, the pictures I took of the bike weren't great, as I used my phone, and some were taken in a funny way that made the ad look unprofessional. But I made sure to clean up the bike, and I want to remind everyone that I took good care of it, and it was in good condition. I knew the bike's true value, and I was confident that I could get the right price for it. Now the challenge was to sort through the potential buyers who wanted to see the bike and make an offer. It's always tough to figure out who is serious about buying and who just wants to get a really cheap deal to sell the bike for a higher price later. In this situation, I only replied to the messages from interested buyers, and it was overwhelming. My Craigslist had received hundreds of replies in just a day or two, and my phone kept buzzing constantly. It became too much to handle, and I thought about ending the ad, but I decided to keep going and started going through each message one by one. To make it easier, I used a copy and paste reply saying, "Thank you for contacting me about the bike. I'm asking for this price, and are you willing to agree to this offer?" Most people replied back, but the majority of them tried to negotiate for a lower price. Out of the 500 replies, about 10 to 20 seemed like serious buyers. People were interested in buying the bike at the full price, but they all had one thing in common. They wanted to see it first. It made sense because you wouldn't want to buy something without checking it out, especially if it's not from a trusted seller or dealer. There could be potential issues or something shady going on. So I started setting up meetings with interested buyers to see the bike. The first person, let's call him John, was in his early 50s and looked like a typical biker. Interestingly, he arrived on a Harley, which was quite different from my Kawasaki bike. At that time, most people riding Kawasaki bikes were young folks who enjoyed speed, while Harley riders tended to be older bikers. But this man, John, was different. He showed interest in the bike, even mentioning that he wanted to buy it for his younger son who was getting into biking. I thought it was a cool idea, but when it came down to the price, John wasn't willing to pay the full amount I asked for. I couldn't budge on the price because I had so many other potential buyers waiting to see the bike. I had set a plan with a specific amount, and I wanted to stick to it. Before putting up the ad, so John left without making a deal. The next potential buyer who came to see the bike was named Graham. He was in his early 20s and had just started getting into biking, or at least that's what he told me. Graham said he had been saving up money from his job to buy a bike, and the 400 cubic centimeters Kawasaki seemed perfect for him. It had enough power for his needs, but not too much that it would be overwhelming for a beginner like him. Graham claimed he had recently obtained his biking license and was really excited about buying this bike. I told him firmly that the price was not negotiable. It was fixed. However, I did allow him to come and take a look at the bike if he was genuinely interested. On Tuesday evening during springtime, around 5:36 p.m., Graham came to see the bike right after finishing his work shift. He parked his car in our driveway and got out. Graham was dressed in jeans and a polo shirt that seemed like a uniform from a retail job, probably for customer service. He greeted me with a handshake and introduced himself. We started chatting and made some small talk as people usually do in such situations. But while we were talking about bikes and how great it would be for Graham to start biking, he started inspecting the bike like a pro, even though he had admitted to never riding one before. The surprising thing was that he looked at everything. I mean absolutely everything. He opened the tank, checked the brakes, and even examined the disc brakes and pads closely. Then he went to the back and used the light to look inside the exhaust. It was quite awkward to continue our small talk while he was busy checking out the bike so thoroughly. Finally, after all that inspection, he made an offer that was more than $1,500 below the price I had asked for. Not only did this enrage me and make me annoyed, but it made me realize I had just wasted my time, and this man had ignored my request of no offers. I allowed him to come round and look at the whole bike and fiddle with it like he was some kind of an expert, and after all that, he comes up with the excuse that the brakes are worn. Now, number one, I knew for certain they weren't worn, as I had just had this bike fully serviced at the local bike dealer only a week before selling this. That was the reason why I had it serviced, so that I could sell it with peace of mind. And having that as evidence, I ran into the house and grabbed the service document with proof saying who serviced it, what they did, what they checked, and nowhere on that form did it say anything about brake pads or brake discs being worn. He seemed to think otherwise, and even though he admitted he was an absolute newbie when it came to biking, he thought that the brake discs were worn and that somehow they had been worn down very low. I knew deep down this is absolute nonsense, but that was his way of justifying such a low offer. I looked him straight in the eye and said, "No low offers. There's nothing wrong with this bike, and if you're not willing to pay the full asking price, then leave immediately." Something switched in this man's eyes. He went from being the happy beginner biker checking over my bike to almost looking like a psychopath. Now his eyes began to dilate, and he stared at me with a frown that could kill 1,000 children. I couldn't believe what was happening. Graham didn't say a word, just stared at me with a blank expression. It made me feel uneasy and unsure of what to do. I was alone, as my wife was inside watching TV. With a firm voice, I told him to leave, trying to sound confident, even though I was uncertain about his intentions. I worried that he might act crazy or become aggressive. Thankfully, he turned around without saying anything, walked back to his car, and drove away. The whole encounter was incredibly awkward, and I couldn't understand why he behaved that way. It left me feeling quite uneasy and puzzled. The brakes were clearly not worn, as I'd had them checked by professionals. But this guy, Graham, seemed to make up some strange excuse to lower the price by a huge amount, which was not fair at all. The bike was priced reasonably, and I didn't want to be taken advantage of. So I had to start the process all over again and go through more potential buyers who wanted to see the bike. Many of them were still offering very low amounts. But then I came across another offer from a guy named Reese. He was willing to offer only $200 less than the asking price and still wanted to take a look at the bike. Reese told me that he wanted to show the bike to someone else in a different state. He asked me to meet him halfway, and since I had a truck and had transported the bike before, I agreed. We decided to meet at a Walmart parking lot about 100 miles away. The drive was quite long, almost an hour. When I finally reached the Walmart parking lot, I couldn't believe what I saw. It wasn't Reese waiting for me. It was the same guy Graham whom I had met before. I was shocked and couldn't believe this was happening. When I saw that it was the same creepy guy Graham with his unsettling eyes, I felt a sense of danger. I decided not to stop the truck and continue driving around to assess the situation. He was waving me over, but I couldn't trust him, even though he claimed to be willing to pay the full price that day. I didn't take any chances because I didn't know what he was planning. There was something fishy about him wanting to meet me at that nearly empty Walmart parking lot late in the evening after he supposedly finished work. He had lied about living in another state and even used a different name to act like a different buyer. This whole situation seemed really suspicious, and I didn't want to put myself in a risky position. So I kept driving and didn't stop the truck. He tricked me into driving almost an hour across the state to meet him, pretending to be someone else, but I didn't fall for it. I knew something wasn't right, so I didn't stop the truck when I saw him at the Walmart parking lot. Instead, I quickly turned around and drove back the way I came. I felt relieved that I didn't stop because it could have been dangerous. I wonder what he had in mind if I had gone out of the truck and met him again. He seemed really crazy, and I'm glad I trusted my instincts and got out of there. My sis and I were on the subject of the guy in my hometown that went on a short killing spree, and she brought this story up I told when it happened. About 8 years ago, I stayed downtown. Back then, if you remember, Craigslist had a personal section. I never really dabbled in that, but being curious, I did. So I made an ad, nothing spectacular, and waited. Not much went down, just some scammers and bots, married people, etc. I get this one message from a young woman telling me how I sound interesting and would love to get to know me more. We exchanged pics. She exchanged an older pic, but she looked pretty cute in it. Had a bright smile and big blue eyes. She was nice, I just wasn't feeling her like that. She was 18 and I was 24 at the time. But also, she was 7 months pregnant. We enjoyed conversations for a few days and we decided to link. She didn't stay far from me. She stayed more on the northeast side, just on the edge of downtown. This day, it was a festival going on. I asked if she wanted to go, but she couldn't because her legs were tired and kind of sore. So I agreed to meet her at her place. She stayed in a northern slum. Not ghetto, but slum. The house was big, but also you could tell off bat that it was used as an apartment. Wasn't an appealing house, but there weren't many other appealing ones either. When I told her I'm outside, I see her come on the front porch. She was a small thing, all of about 5'0" tall, white with dark hair. Couldn't be no more than 90, 110 pounds, and that was because of the pregnancy. Her baby bump was very noticeable. She had a small chocolate Labrador puppy with her. They both were happy to see me. When I got close to her, I was surprised. She didn't have the same bright smile I saw in her pics. Her teeth were gray and her face looked like someone who was into heavy drugs. Her eyes still had light to them. But overall, she looked like a tired human being and not in the fatigued sense. I gave her a hug, made sure to watch my strength. We went into the place. There wasn't nothing sketchy about it. It stunk, like animals and weed. We went upstairs and I saw a black couple up there. They shut their door and it seemed like they were arguing. All the rooms upstairs seemed small and the ceilings were slanted. Her room was fitted pretty nice. She was a smoker. I smelled the ashtray stench. We decided to watch Pineapple Express. That was my first time seeing that movie. She complained about her legs a lot. I seen some little swelling on them, so I gave her legs a rub. I used her body lotion. She loved it a lot and appreciated it big time. We talked, and it was getting late, and I wanted to head out to downtown and catch the heat of the festivities. She looked like she enjoyed my company a lot, and as we were waving goodbye, for some reason, I just said to myself, "Ma'am, that chick seems troubled." I thought of burning sage when I got home. Like 2 days later, she hit me up saying her ex-boyfriend got kicked out of his place and he needed somewhere to stay. So me and her hanging out couldn't happen again, which I didn't care. I just told her I understood and make sure she's safe. I left to Chicago to spend time with family. I came back a week later, and after getting my hair retwisted, I saw a realty sign with her last name on it when I was out for a walk. She had a unique last name. I decided to check on her. I sent her an email. No response. About 5 minutes later, I opened up Facebook, and as I scrolled, I stopped immediately because I saw the very picture she first sent me. I'm like, why the hell is that pic on here? I click a link saying there was a triple homicide. I sat on the curb and was shocked. I couldn't believe it. I read the details and was shocked. She met a guy on Craigslist for sex. Her ex met up with him too, supposedly. He killed the ex-boyfriend and decapitated him. Left his body at a park I was familiar with. He took her and held her captive in his basement. He tortured her for a week. What made me so pissed was that he went to a sports bar down the street from me and told the bartenders how he has someone locked up in his basement right now. Nobody took it serious to call the police. That probably could have saved her. He strangled her and stuffed her in a suitcase. By then, the police figured him out, and he was on the run. When they stopped his car, he decided to take himself out. They found him probably because of the emails from Craigslist. I know they investigated my email. I deleted it immediately once I took all this in. About a month later, I was on Craigslist, and I saw in the miscellaneous section about meeting scammers and such. I posted a reply about people being careful, and I posted her story. Also, around then, I had a guy I went to HS with who got caught robbing people for money on there. When I summarized her story, I get a reply. It was from a lady demanding to know what I know. Come to find out, it was her aunt. When I told her she wanted to talk on the phone, so I did. I gave her my condolences and told her about the time we spent together. She told me her ex was pimping her out. Her life never was like that. Her parents were good people and confused that she took that path in life. That girl was just a baby. I've been around death before, but nothing like that. Because what if I kept hanging with her? The crazier parts are the guy had another woman in his place, but she escaped. She was living with him, and he made her a sex slave. But also, he was supposed to fly to Vegas to meet a lady from a fetish site. But there were complications on his end. The day he committed the murder, he contacted the lady and told her he wanted to meet her ASAP. He was paying for the travel and everything, but she needed his info. She didn't go through with it, but she looked him up and happened to see his connection with a triple homicide. What's even more dark is that they didn't find her ex-boyfriend's head at the park, just his body. They found his head north of the city in 2019, like 25 miles away from his dead body. Why did he take that head? What'd he do with it to travel with it like that? The awkward thing is that there was a lady who lived with me a year later after that. Things were complicated, and I had to kick her out. She moved into the exact room that Chick was in. I know because I had to come over there to give her something she left. This is also the girl that played a major part in my sister and her ex-boyfriend breaking up for good. People do come into your life for a reason, I suppose. I use Craigslist for business and some social events. But after that, my approach became entirely different. And I became very cautious on who I met. P.S. He unalived himself after the end of the high-speed chase. The cops followed him, and he shot himself. The woman was in the trunk of his car inside a suitcase. I can't remember the exact year, but my nan had passed away, so we had to clean her house, and it was filled with so much stuff. I was around 14 at the time, and my parents were also extremely sad at what had happened, so it was a rather depressing time for me and my sister, who were also dragged along to clear the house out. There were a lot of memories in this house, and we had spent many weekends around our nans. This was a time when she would always care for us and take care when our parents were away or on holidays by themselves. So we began the task of clearing out her house. At the time, it was a rather small house in the rural areas of Oregon. It was surrounded by trees and great oaks, and even had a pine forest bordering the border. This was amazing, and we'd often spend most afternoons playing outside in our garden and running through the forests. Our parents would yell at us, though, as we needed to also do our own fair share of the work, and clearing out the house was a mammoth task for only four people. Finally, my dad found a solution for us. Instead of just throwing everything away, he suggested that we should create some ads on websites like Craigslist or eBay to sell some of the stuff online. We kept the most valuable and sentimental antiques for ourselves, things that meant a lot to us, and we wanted to take back to our own house. However, we had to get rid of many other things because we were planning to sell the house in the next week or two. So my dad made a Craigslist ad and put up various items for sale. You won't believe this, but there were around 2,000 items that my dad managed to list by creating separate ads for each one. My mom suggested making one big ad with a brief description of everything for sale, but my dad is a perfectionist. He wanted to pay attention to every small detail, so he spent 3 or 4 hours every night listing each item one by one. All his effort paid off because we started getting hundreds of responses from interested buyers. People came to the house to check out the things we were selling. Some items got more attention than others. My Nan lived a long life, reaching 102 years old. She lived alone for many decades, even after my grandfather passed away. Back then, my Nan had a big collection of antiques, and while many of them didn't have much value, there were some china sets that were really special. They had intricate designs and interesting patterns that caught people's attention. Some folks were really interested in these china sets, and we got a lot of responses. These sets included mugs, knives, spoons, and things with woven and carved metal designs. I'm not exactly sure what to call them, but I'm doing my best to describe them. One day, a strange man came to visit us. I remember him knocking on the door to check out some of the cutlery and china sets. This man who visited had some eye issues, as they seemed to be looking in different directions. As kids, we were a bit scared because we didn't understand why he looked different. Sometimes kids can't help but stare and wonder about things that are unfamiliar. As he came in, I got a bad feeling from him, but my parents seemed unaware of it. They greeted him politely with the usual, "Hello, how are you?" and directed him towards the china set to check it out. My dad was under a lot of stress during that time, juggling his job and clearing out the house, so he was quite busy. But he made the bad mistake of leaving the man to look at the china set while he went off and continued to clear boxes from the upstairs. My mom was still downstairs with us while my dad was working like a headless chicken, piling things into boxes upstairs. I was sat at the computer, trying to figure out this Craigslist ad and accept more and more offers. I was also doing communications and talking to people and helping them with what they wanted. My sister was sitting on the sofa, but I'm not sure as I can't remember what she was doing at the time, and my mom was in the kitchen. So, this guy had quite literally been left alone downstairs with us. I kept glancing over at times, and he was just looking at the cutlery and the china set. He had it very close to his eyes, and he seemed to be paying attention to the fine detail on the patterns. But I don't blame him, as they really were beautiful. Some of them had Chinese-style patterns, and some were even Indian-style cutlery sets, and it was very impressive. Maybe he was just one of those people who had a knack or an interest in those types of individual unique things. Anyway, I continued to scroll through my Craigslist messages on my dad's account when all of a sudden I heard my mom screaming. I didn't know what was happening, but when someone in your family yells out like that, you feel their pain deeply. I know it's hard to explain, but especially when you're younger, you have a strong connection with your parents, at least that's how I feel. My mom's scream was terrifying, and it made me gasp. My dad heard it too and started running down the stairs, but before he could reach us, I heard loud crashing and banging noises from upstairs. It seemed like he was stumbling over boxes or dropping things while he was still busy clearing out stuff. I looked around and saw my mom in the kitchen. She was pinned against the fridge by the man who had come to see the china set. It was the scariest and most disturbing thing I could ever recall. The man visiting us started trying to take my mom's clothes off, and she fought back. Suddenly, my dad rushed down the stairs and immediately put the man in some kind of hold, taking him down to the floor. My mom was gasping for breath and looked like she might pass out. My dad did a great job restraining the man, and he told me to call 911 right away. I ran to my nan's old phone, which was covered in dust, and dialed 911. I tried my best to explain what was happening, but I was in such shock that my words didn't come out as I planned. It was a really scary and chaotic situation. My younger sister was crying and went upstairs all alone. The whole incident was so frightening that even now, the family still talks about it and remembers what happened. My dad was a real hero as he saved my mom from that awful man who didn't really care about the china sets. He was just trying to harm my mom. It's essential to take care of your family as they mean a lot, and we need to be there for each other. I was selling a guitar on Craigslist as I had more than enough, and this one just didn't get the attention it deserved. Listed it at $600 firm. The guitar was a limited run, Schecter C1 with a Floyd Rose bridge, a custom camo finish and factory distressed brass hardware. Brand new, the thing listed at over $1,000. Figured $600 was a fair price all things considered, especially since it had no dings or scratches. Couldn't even tell the thing was used. A few days after posting it is get a guy texting me about how he'd happily trade for it along with a smaller cash offer. Politely explained that I wasn't looking for trades and that the price was firm. He decides to go on a rant about how I'm mentally unstable. No one is going to pay that much for such a piece of shit. You're lucky if you get even half the offer I have you. As if $150 with a little practice amp is somehow worth it. Told him thanks for the criticism, but I know what my gear is worth. This led to 5 days of relentless texts and emails from this dude. All rage-filled, each more insulting than the last. He texts me again on day 6 asking if the guitar was still for sale, and if I'd do business with him if he gave me more than what I was asking. As if I'd do business with someone who insulted my knowledge of my gear, my intelligence as a person, and acted like a grade a cock nozzle. So I was driving by myself on a highway in Maine, cranking killer tunes, slamming Mountain Dew big gulps, and sucking back American Spirit lights. Decided to go hog wild at a Taco Bell drive-thru, and ordered an enormous amount of food, extra fixins. So I'm devouring the Taco Bell, had a full menu assortment. Live mass. Of course, about 40 minutes after I ate, my stomach began seizing and cramping. There was to be no refunds, no returns. Luckily, I see a rest stop coming up in about 2 miles. I floor it and pull in. It's about 1:30 a.m., and it seems pretty vacant. There's one other vehicle in the lot, windows steamed up. I assume it's just another road tripper who had to pull over to rub one out. We've all been there. No judgment. I get out of my car and run into the men's room. I was holding the bottom of my pants when I ran in because I wasn't sure I was going to make it. Finally, I'm in the stall and it's not a good scene. Figuring I would be in there a while, I brought my smokes and a copy of Mad Magazine I always keep in my car for emergencies like this. I'm working on my fourth American Spirit when I hear another person come in. Footsteps stop. I hear him taking deep breaths. I holler out, "Hey man, I'd keep those breaths shallow." No response. I can see dude's feet right in front of the stall. They're huge. Got to be at least a size 17. Dirty as shit, too. I sit in silence staring at these huge shoes. Sudden ass blasts squeeze out and the sound echoes in the empty restroom. All of a sudden, guy starts pounding on the door, then grabbing the top and shaking it. "I'll be out in a minute, you spaz," I screamed. Then it stops. I hear the footsteps again, and then a lot of squeaking. then footsteps again, then the door opening and slamming shut. Of course, there was no toilet paper in the stall, and it was not a clean pinch, as you can imagine. I had to use my Mad magazine. Alfred E. Newman has never been so disrespected. I exit the stall and see in marker written on the mirror, "See you outside," and it was signed Nitro. I'm born and bred in Maine. I've met a lot of guys who go by Nitro. Not a one do I want to meet alone at a rest stop in the middle of nowhere. I'm terrified. I hatch a plan that I am just going to go for it. I open the restroom's door and sprint to my car. Not looking back, I just run. I hear a shuffle and footsteps behind me. "Ugh," I hear behind me. I left my car unlocked because it's a piece of shit, and I get right in. I get the car going and do a bit of a burnout and speed off. I see in my rear-view mirror the silhouette of a massive man. He threw his hat on the ground and began jumping up and down as I sped down the highway. No idea what this guy's intentions were. But this was easily a top five scary moment for me, and I can't really bring myself to poop in a public restroom since.